So that was an interesting thing. So anyways, this one is more of a backing up, look in the bird's eye, some things. All right, I think I've talked enough. Let's go to the Bible lesson. Genesis chapter 1 in our Bibles is what we're turning to. And we're going to start in verse 27. And we're going to read down to verse number 31. So we're in Genesis chapter 1. I'll begin in verse 27 to the end of the chapter. And then once we do that, we're going to flip over to chapter 9. And then we'll think about what these verses say and then launch into some general observations about our homes. Genesis 1, verse 27. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them. And God blessed them, and God said unto them, now notice what the Lord says here. Be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. Notice those eight words. Be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. And subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over every living thing that moveth upon the earth. And God said, behold, I have given you every herb bearing seed which is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree in which is the fruit of the tree yielding seed, to which to you it shall be for meat. And to every beast of the earth, and to every fowl of the air, and to everything that creepeth upon the earth, wherein there is life, I have given every green herb for meat, and it was so. And God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good, and the evening and the morning were the sixth day. Now, turn with me to Genesis chapter 9. We go forward, and now we talk about Noah. So that was God's command to Adam. Now notice what he says to Noah, starting in verse 1, chapter 9. And God blessed Noah and his sons, and said unto them, watch, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. Same eight words. And the fear of you and the dread of you shall be upon every beast of the earth and upon every fowl of the air and upon all that moveth upon the earth and upon all the fishes of the sea into your hand are they delivered. Every moving thing that liveth shall be meat for you, which is not what he had said to Adam. Even as the green herb, which is what he said to Adam, have I given you all things. But flesh with the life thereof, which is the blood thereof, shall ye not eat. So in other words, with the blood. Verse 5, and surely your blood of your lives will I require, at the hand of every beast will I require, and at the hand of man, at the hand of every man's brother will I require the life of man. Whoso sheddeth man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed, for in the image of God made he man. And you be fruitful and multiply, bring forth abundantly in the earth, and multiply therein. Now, God gives Adam, and then God gives Noah the same command using the same eight words. And I pointed those out to you as we looked at it, just so you would see it, but we'll look at it again, verse 1 of chapter 9, and you'll see it again back in Genesis 1. Be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. So, Adam got that command, and Noah got that command. Now, let me ask you this. Do you think the circumstances that command was given was the same circumstances? When God gave this command to Adam, what kind of circumstances was he in? Paradise. When God gave this command to Noah, what was the circumstances like? Devastation. I mean, I'm not sure exactly what the world looked like after he got off the ark. A year before, he gets on the ark and everything was there. A year later, he gets off the ark. We know there's some green things growing because of the birds bringing the dove bringing back the branch there, but it probably did not look like paradise. But God gave him the same command. Different circumstances, same command. So that's the direction we're going with this. Both Adam and Noah had to obey within the context of their own unique circumstances. And I think this is a good illustration in applying biblical principles and lessons to our individual homes. I think if we don't understand this, as we looked at all these lessons, if we don't understand that each home has some unique things going on, and we don't understand that, and we just try to do it without considering the uniqueness of our home, it can create a lot of probably needless misunderstanding and needless stress in our homes. So this evening, what I want to do is share some basic general observations that must be considered as we apply these principles that we looked at for 22 weeks, 22 lessons, it's been over 22 weeks, that we've looked at 22 lessons about our homes and how do we think about this in the uniqueness of our own homes. Now, this is important, make sure you get this. We are not changing the principles for each home. We're not saying this home has these principles and this home has different principles. Nor are we saying, well, in this situation, you don't have to do that. In this situation, you don't. We're not saying that. We're not changing the principles, and we're not applying some principles in some homes and some principles in another home. Rather, what we're saying is there needs to be spiritual wisdom and prudence in how we apply all the same principles in every home. So every home, the Bible applies to all of us and applies to all of us equally, but also applies to us uniquely. We have to say, how do we uniquely apply all the Bible says to my set of circumstances? So if we go back again to our foundational illustration here, God gave Adam a command, and he was to obey this command within the unique set of circumstances that he faced. God gave Noah the very same command, and he was to obey that command in the unique set of circumstances that he faced. Could Noah say, well, this ain't paradise, so I can't do it? Nope. You got to do it, Noah. No matter what, no matter how different it may be from Adam's situation, you need to do it in your situation. And I think the Lord gives us grace, and the Lord gives us wisdom to know how to do it, but this is what we must do. So we have to apply all these same principles in every home, but using wisdom and prudence and knowing how they apply uniquely in our homes. Now, let me just give you one more little side note, and then we'll get ready to write some things down. Typically in these lessons, what we've looked at is some verses, and we've drawn lessons or applications or principles from the verses. That's typically how I teach almost anything. Here's the verse. Here's a principle that we're drawing from this, so we understand how to apply it to our lives. That is not how this lesson is going to go. This lesson is looking back at the previous 22 lessons, saying, looking at all the things we taught, here's some observations as you begin applying those things to your life. So these are general observations about all of the lessons put together. So I'm going to share three big ones, and there are some subpoints there, as you'll probably notice in your worksheet. But I'm going to give you three big observations to consider. And a lot of it is real basic, but I think that maybe we just don't think about it, and so I'm going to try to encourage you to think about it. So number one, you ready? Here we go. Big number one. We need to consider the unique differences in our homes. There are unique differences in every home. Now, what are the unique differences? Well, there are several. One is your home will have unique occupants. Those who occupy in your homes, the mom, the dad, the kids, those unique occupants have unique backgrounds, unique personalities, unique abilities. I was talking to Cole about this here. I think it was Cole. Might have been Kelly. Might have been my wife. It was someone. And so when I preach here, I preach different if someone else asks me to come to preach for them. And the reason is I'm comfortable here. And the reason I'm comfortable here is because you get my humor. See? You're already laughing. So now I'm at other churches, and I try using my humor, and this is what I get. I'm telling a joke. Get ready to laugh. I'm telling. Also, this is what I feel like I need to do. Okay, everyone, look here. Here's a joke. Get ready to laugh. And then I tell them so they can be prepared. And so, so we all have our unique personalities. You understand my personality, and I try to understand. Okay, we understand each other's personality. We have unique personalities. We have unique humor. And so every home has some unique things about it because of the unique people who live there. And not every home is going to be the same way because not everyone is the same, so not every home is going to be the same. Now watch this. Not every man is a MacGyver. You know who MacGyver is? Please tell me you know who MacGyver. Okay, don't be doing it. Look, no, who's MacGyver? Okay, there was a new MacGyver not long ago, so you can't fool me. MacGyver is a guy who could take a piece of string and a bobby pin and create atomic bombs. I mean, this is a guy who could do everything with nothing. And some guys are that way. Some guys, they're good at everything they put their hands to. They just shine. They know mechanics. They know electrical. They know plumbing. They know computers. They know carpentry. They know everything about everything. I don't like those people because they make me feel bad. But anyways, there are people that way. You probably know some. I know some that way. But you know what? Not every guy's that way. Not every guy is good with lumber. Not every guy is good with a car. Not every guy is good with a computer. So we have our uniqueness. So not every guy's MacGyver. So if this home has a MacGyver dad or MacGyver husband and this home doesn't, then there's going to be some differences there. There is. So not every man is a MacGyver. Now watch this. And not every woman is a Martha Stewart. There are some people who are just... Okay, I think I can use this. I'm kind of worried this may get me in trouble because sometimes people think I'm being mean. I'm not being mean. Okay. Personally, I don't like a lot of foo-foo stuff. You know, this isn't so bad. But, you know, after we could, you know, just this by itself would be fine with me. I mean, I don't need a whole bunch. But some people like a lot. And some people are real good at doing it that way. And they're real good at decorating. They're real good at color schemes. They're real good at all those things. Not everyone's that way. You go to some homes, you're like, wow, man, this is really nice in here. And you go to other homes, you're like, interesting. Never thought those would go together, because they really don't. Now, not every man is MacGyver. Not every woman's a Martha Stewart. So there's going to be some unique occupants. They have their unique preferences, unique likes, unique dislikes. And all that's going to make their home different than another home. So your home will have unique occupants. Also, notice this. These occupants will have unique occupations, which means they have different schedules, different incomes, and different stress levels. When I worked at Long John Silver's, thank you, I was in management. If you've ever been in management, you know what management is like. It's like slave labor. You're on call 24 hours a day, even if it's not your shift. Somehow they think that you care, and they keep calling you about things. You're like, it's not my shift. I don't care. But you can't say that, because then they wouldn't be a good employee by saying that. So, and management, and it's very stressful. It's just the nature of management. But when I started working at FedEx, FedEx was totally different. Because when I punched that clock and punched out, I could care less at Long John's, but I could actually say at FedEx, I don't care. I don't care what happens. I don't care what any package, whether it goes out or doesn't go out. I'm off the clock. It's not my problem. And I'd go home with, didn't care. Now, that wasn't the same thing. So your job, and the reality is this, it carries on into your home, whether you like it or not. If you have a high-stress job, often it shouldn't. You don't want it to, but it does carry on into your home. Because that stress is there in your life. And so you have different schedules, you have different incomes, you have different stress levels. Whether you own a company or work for someone, whether you're hourly or salary, whether it's factory or office, construction versus computer, all these things affect what's going on in your home because they affect you. So homes will have unique occupants. These occupants have unique occupations. And then these homes will exist in unique areas. Living in the city is different than living in the country. And both of those impacts your activities and your schedule. When growing up in West Virginia, where I lived on the farm, we were right near the river. Here's our farm here. We walked over that was just kind of a little bit of a hill, and you could stand there and you could see the river. Or walked all the way down the gravel road to the river. So the river is right over there. And across the river was the mall and the store, and everything we needed to go to was right there. I could see it. But to get there was a long time. Because you had to go way out of the holler, way down the hard road, way out to the main bridge, which is way, way down there, cross the bridge, come all the way back up. You're talking 30, 45 minutes easy just to get there. And I'm saying, it's right there! But everywhere was far. You didn't go. There was no place close by, except, well, woods. That was close by. Other than that, there was no store. Now, here is totally different. If you live here, you can just really go right down the road. There's restaurants or stores. You can walk to them most of the time, even from your house. So that makes it different. It's going to affect your schedule. It's going to affect the activities. Going to the store when you live way out in the boonies, that's a big activity versus maybe living in the city. So there's different areas have different opportunities, different weather, different conveniences. All these things are going to affect your home. And so you have to consider those things. You just can't look at every home and think every home is going to be the same, because every home is not the same. There's uniqueness. All that to give us to big number two, which is this. We learn from others, but don't simply copy them. Learn, yes. Copy, no. We should not seek to have what I would call cookie-cutter homes that are carbon copies of each other. Now, again, can we learn? Yes. And you can see someone maybe who has their, if you will, their act together and say, okay, I can learn how they're doing that and apply some of those things in our situation. And those are helpful. Now, this one I'm about to say, there is no one-size-fits-all type of home. And if you think so, you're going to be stressed out, because you're going to spend all your time comparing yourself to something else and wondering why we can't have that type, because maybe they have completely different schedules, different incomes, different, so many things could be different. So we can learn from others, but we're not trying to simply copy them into our homes. Now, when we think about this, we have to consider the danger of social media. Because social media gets us thinking that this ideal home must look like this. Can I tell you, the ideal home that you're looking at on social media probably doesn't even look like that. If you got to spend, and some people do, hours just getting everything just right to take the picture to post it, really, do you want to spend hours of your life just to get the exact look for, what, 5 minutes? You know, if you got a house full of kids, your house should look like you have a house full of kids. If your house is immaculate, every chair is perfectly in the right spot, there's no fingerprints anywhere, there's nothing spilt ever on the floor, everything is, like, you open the refrigerator and everything's, like, perfectly set in there, and you have a house full of kids, something's not right. Because how could you do that and really spend time with your kids and let your kids be kids? Now, I'm not saying that they have to tear the house up and be crazy, but they are going to be kids, and you have to understand that. And so can we learn from others? Absolutely. Do we simply copy them in order to find validation in ourselves? Absolutely not. So we should not seek to have cookie-cutter homes that are simply carbon copies of each other. Now watch this statement. Based on that little social media rant, we find our value and acceptance in our relationship with Christ. And then we need to transfer that acceptance to those in our homes. You have never earned or deserve God's acceptance. He gives it to us freely. It's called grace. And that's how the people in your home need to feel like. They shouldn't feel like they're earning, well, I got to do all these things so my parents accept me. I got to do all these things so my spouse accepts me. That is not the way we want our homes to be. That happens when we're thinking that our homes have to be this picture-perfect thing that we've seen somewhere else. And that is not what we want to do. There is a danger of comparing our home with someone else's in order to validate ourselves. Again, that's one of the great dangers of social media. When you're comparing for the sake of validation, okay, so let me stop. Can we learn? Yes. Is it good to say, hey, you seem to have pretty well scheduled things going on in your family. How do you do that? And you learn from each other. Or, hey, you know, you kind of have some, seems like your income and our income's kind of same, but you seem to be able to stretch it more. What are some of the things you do? Okay, I can learn. Okay, there's ways to learn from each other. But we're not looking to have our home set up in such a way that we're using it to validate ourselves or to impress others about ourselves. That's not what we're using our homes to do. So there is this great danger of comparing our home with someone else just to validate ourselves. When we do that, one of two things are going to happen. Either we're going to become proud because you're going to find someone that you're better than, and so therefore you feel better than them, and that's pride. Or you're going to be discouraged because someone does it better than you, and now you feel like, well, I'm just such a failure, I might as well give up. And both of those are wrong reactions. And we don't want to be that way. We don't want to be either filled with pride or discouragement. No, those are the first two. Let me give you the third one. The third one's a little more detailed. So we're thinking about our homes. We're trying to apply all these lessons. We need to understand each home is unique. Therefore, we're not simply trying to copy what someone else does into our home because our home is going to be unique and isn't going to work that way. Can we learn? Absolutely. Do we simply carbon copy or cookie cutter? Absolutely not. So that brings us to number three, which has some subpoints to it. So then how do we do this? How do we look at this? Well, number three is this. Each home should have the same ingredients, but it's adjusted, those ingredients are adjusted to fit that family. Maybe you've done this. I've tried this. It never have succeeded. And I think it's a good illustration because it usually doesn't work well. You go to a restaurant and they cook a certain dish a certain way. And you're like, man, that's real good. I think I could do that. Now, some people can. I'm not one of those someones, but I've tried. So you go to a restaurant, you like the dish, and then you get the recipe. A lot of times you can Google it and find out, you know, just like they make it. And so you get the recipe, and you follow the recipe exactly. And you do everything they say exactly, but it's not the same outcome. And the reason is, most people, when they cook, they put their own little something to it. You know, what is a tablespoon? Well, a tablespoon is a tablespoon, but some people put a heaping. Some people put a level. Some people kind of put almost a tablespoon. Some people say, about 350 based on, let's make it 355, maybe 340, and they kind of adjust it. So it may be the exact same ingredients, or here's this dish with these ingredients. Here's this dish with the exact same ingredients, but they don't taste the same because they're adjusting. Sometimes they adjust it to flavor. It needs a little bit of this, or they take, it needs a little bit of that. The same thing is true in our homes. When we think about the recipe of our homes, we have to adjust it to the flavor that we want in our homes, to what the uniqueness of our home is. And so it has the same ingredients. Every home, I think, every Christian home should have the same ingredients, but it's going to be somewhat slightly adjusted to fit your situation. So there's a bunch of ingredients that we've gone over. I'm going to give you basically a five of those, kind of lumping everything together into five statements. So here, I think, are the five basic ingredients, regardless of whatever is going on in your home. Whether you work first shift, second shift, third shift, whether you're a double-income family, a single-income family, whether you live in a city or maybe out in the boonies, you live in some rich, fancy place like Grafton, or you live in in the slums of Elyria, whatever it may be. However you live, wherever you live, whatever your job, all of these ingredients still should be in your home, adjusted accordingly, but they should be in your home. So let me give you the first one. Letter A. So what are these ingredients? First ingredient, a testimony of knowing the Lord personally. Every home needs people in it who know the Lord personally. You know, there's a verse, it goes like this. Except the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain. We must know the Lord personally. We cannot simply say, oh, yeah, okay, next one. No. That is an essential one. We cannot leave the Lord out of it. I know I've mentioned this. I don't know if I mentioned it in a Bible study. I've mentioned it, I know, in the men's prayer meeting. My one son, Dennis Jr., he's had some spiritual struggles. Part of it is, you know, the military moves him. Part of it is COVID. Part of it is just being stupid. And being human. As a dad, as a preacher, I'd say being human. As a dad, I say being stupid. But they went to church Sunday and for Easter service and went over to the pastor's house for Easter dinner. So that was a blessing. It was a good church. It's the church that we were recommending to him. Now, here's what I say about him or anyone else that's struggling. If If you struggle in your family, you better check where the Lord is. Because if the Lord's not in the right place, nothing else is going to matter. You can't overcompensate for that. It'd be like this. I made years ago, as a 14 years of age, I was making some cream of wheat. For some reason, I don't know why, I added several tablespoons of salt. Let me ask you, do you think you can add enough sugar to get over that? You cannot, okay? And that's the same thing in our homes. If you leave the Lord out, you cannot add enough of anything else to compensate for it. The Lord must be there. We must know the Lord personally. Now, this would include both a salvation testimony and a sanctification testimony. In other words, be saved, yes, but also the idea that we're growing, we're living for Him, He's developing our lives. So that home needs to have members in it that have a personal, ongoing relationship with Christ. It is essential. It is necessary. It is a necessary ingredient. Now, again, I understand if someone works a certain shift. Okay, when I was in college, Wednesday night, usually, I was at work almost every Wednesday night. So you know where I wasn't Wednesday night? I wasn't at church. Why? Because I was at work. Now, was I home watching TV? No. Was I at the ball game? No. Was I just not wanting to go? I was actually physically at work, and if I wasn't at work, then I'd be in church. Well, I would say this, if you have a home where the guy or the girl or whoever, they're working, I understand why they're not there Wednesday night. But if I'm home Wednesday night, and it's Wednesday night, then I ought to be at church on Wednesday night. That's how you adjust it. So it looks slightly different based on your schedule, based on some other things. But you need to have the Lord first and foremost in your family. Everything needs to be pointing that way. Everything needs to be geared that way. So we need to have a testimony of knowing the Lord personally. Now we're going to build on that and kind of try to just keep beating that horse, as it were. Letter B is this: an acceptance of each person's biblical responsibility. The Bible has to be the basis of our behavior and responsibility. I think I alluded to this, or maybe I said it last Wednesday. Let me tell you what the Bible teaches: that the man is the head of the home. Okay, Pastor White, you know, that's kind of old-fashioned. Yeah, it is. But it's also biblical. Well, you just think men are better. Nope. I think sometimes a woman would do better, but that's not how God set it up. This is how God set it up. The man's ahead of the house, and the family is supposed to follow. And woe be to the man if he's not leading them right, because the Lord's going to hold that man responsible, and that's not a good place to be in if you're not doing right. So this responsibility will require each person to submit to God's leadership in the home. We need a God-led husband slash father, and then the wife, mom, following him, and the kids following the parents. If you watch the average TV show, the woman is very strong-willed, very domineering, treating the husband or the father like he's a total idiot, and you have a bunch of smart-aleck, wise-cracking kids who think that their parents are stupid and they don't have to listen to them, and they have a laugh track to let you know you're supposed to be laughing and going along with it. But that's exactly opposite of what God entails. God expects it to be a man, then the wife, then the kids. That's how the Lord has set it up. And I'm not going to rehash everything we said last week. We're not saying one's better than the other and all that. But this is the Lord's direction, the Lord's organization of the home. So there needs to be acceptance of each person's biblical responsibility. What is my responsibility in the home in this situation? And I need to do what the Lord would have me to do. Let me give you a third part of that ingredient. So there's a testimony of knowing the Lord. That then allows me to start understanding my responsibility and fulfilling that responsibility with the Lord's help. And then letter C is this: a commitment and trust in the Lord's provisions for the family. Often when I probably haven't said this to the Runkles. I'll say it to you now. I know I've said it to the Werners. I've said it to new families when they come in, especially young families. Let me tell you, you have a target on your back. And you think Satan's going to say, oh, now you're going to church, I'm going to leave you alone. No. Now you're going to church, he's really going to come at you. And he'll send struggles your way. And many times, they're financial struggles. Everything seems to be, I shouldn't say going good. I mean, there'll be some struggles, but now that you're trying to live for the Lord and do what he's called you to do, maybe all of a sudden now there's an issue here financially, and the great temptation is, let's take a step away from the Lord, we'll get everything fixed, and then we'll come back. And it never works that way. Because to step away from the Lord is called backsliding. And backsliding is a downward slope with no bottom to it, and just keep on that downward slope. The best thing to do is, I'm just going to do what's right to do, regardless of the difficulty. We're just going to plow through this. But there is this understanding that we have to trust the Lord in the provisions for the family. I won't go through all the different stories I've told you over the years, but I can tell you the Lord has tried my wife and I in this many a times when we just had to say, Lord, we're just going to do what's right. I'm not sure how everything's going to turn out, how we're going to make ends meet, but we're going to trust you in this. And the Lord has always shown himself strong. Do you always eat steak? No. Do you always get the new car? No. But you know what you get? You get the provisions of God, and you learn that God is faithful to his people. And that's better than steak and a new car. So there are many struggles and difficulties that arise. But let me tell you what makes your struggles and difficulties worse is when you start acting in a lack of faith. Here's what happens. We incur unreasonable debt instead of trusting God. Families get themselves in a whole lot of trouble because instead of trusting God, they start incurring debt. Now, let me say some things. I'm not trying to be unkind, and I'm not trying to be old fogey, because number one, I am, by nature, I'm a kind person, even though Cole Maley thinks I'm not, but I am a kind person. And I'm absolutely not an old fogey. I'm only 35. And a little bit more. Now, let me just say this. When it comes to things like vacations and Christmas and all these things, every parent wants to do the most they can. But we cannot be crazy and get ourselves in all kinds of financial trouble and end up now, can't be in church because I got to work an extra job and everything's falling apart because of this debt we have. And let me tell you, your kid may have gotten the great vacation, the great gift, and the great Christmas, but you're robbing them of the Lord's blessing in their life. And so we need to make sure the Lord's first in these things. So we don't want to incur unreasonable debt. We trust the Lord in these things. Do the best you can financially for your family, but trust the Lord in the things you can't do. Don't just get so far in debt that you have to kill yourself and get away from the Lord that way. And secondly, I would say this, we endure unbearable stress instead of trusting God. Let me just tell you, I believe you know this. Let me remind you of this and encourage you in this. God loves your spouse and your kids more than you do. Okay? You don't have to convince God to take care of you. He wants to take care of you. If there's something that's coming up short, either he's trying to teach you something, he's trying to change something maybe that shouldn't be in your life, there's something he's actively doing, so we trust him in these times. I understand there can be stress. Trust me, I understand there can be stress. I do understand that personally. But I also know what it is to go to bed at night and say, Lord, my life and the life of my family is in your hands. I'm going to sleep. That's all I can do right now. And I wake up and I'm refreshed. So he gives his beloved sleep. And so we need to learn to trust him. We just can't be stressed out all the time and just at wit's end because everything's not working out just right. That's not what the Lord's called us to be. I understand there are stressful times, and there are times that are way more stressful than other times. But we need to have this commitment and trust in the Lord's provisions for us. That's number three. That's the third ingredient. And that changes. That ingredient changes from sometimes. Sometimes when you have an abundance of money, like when the government's just giving out check after check, and we're rolling in money and buying guns and all things like that, and it may not be as stressful. But there are other times when, you know, you're out of money, but you're not out of month. Yeah, I've been there. I've been there where, okay, well, we're out of groceries. Yeah, but that was yesterday, was grocery day, so we got another 5-6 days here to make it through this. I understand the stress, but I'm telling you, trust the Lord in these things. You'll see the Lord come through. You'll see the Lord teach you some great lessons. Here's a fourth one. So we have commitment and trust in the Lord. Letter D is this, and you kind of see all these are just kind of building on each other or helping each other for completion here. And that is this, a clear spiritual focus and direction in your home. Bible on the coffee table and a cross hanging on the wall is not sufficient. Well, yeah, we're a spiritual home. Look, I got the coffee table and a cross. There's a picture of Jesus in velvet right there. Okay, that's not, it needs a little bit more than that. Okay, so let me say this, and I know I'm preaching to the choir because you're here tonight, but let me just say it anyways. Because just because you're here tonight doesn't mean you're going to be here next night, next Wednesday night. So here, listen to the statement. Your family needs to be actively a part of a local church. I'm going to tell you something that's going to knock your socks off. There have been people over the years who have not liked me and who have left this church because they didn't. I know. I sit at home stunned. I'm like, okay. Now, typically what I say to them, and most always we part on good terms. Okay, there's a family here. I don't think I'm being out of turn. If it is, I will apologize to him if he ever says he didn't like this. There's a family here, and this is the dining room days. One of our foundational families, good guy. Issue came up, we parted ways. Doesn't matter the issue. And I'm not trying to make him look bad or anything. So we parted ways. But my counsel to him was this. Just because you're not going to church here, you need to be church somewhere. Your family needs to be in church. You need to be an active part of a local church. This is what our families need. And so we have to keep, in our minds, it should always be, if somehow you're moving to some other place from this area, the first thing you look for is not the best neighborhood, not where the Walmart is. You look for where is a good church to have your family in. You say, well, there isn't one. Then don't move there. Because the church is more important than the Walmart. And so our families need to be a part of a local church, active part of it. Family needs that. What you find is this. Your home's value system, how you organize, prioritize, typically is going to be built on and motivated by the preaching that goes on from that pulpit of that church. You go to a church that is not a on fire, gospel preaching, soul winning, you know, taking a stand for doing right and such, and you go there and everything is just kind of like, eh, pretty soon this is how you're going to be. Eh. Okay. This is important in each of our lives. It's not because, I'm not saying this just because I'm the pastor, I'm saying this because I believe what the Bible teaches, and the Bible teaches us we need to be under the preaching of God's Word in a way that compels us, motivates us to live our life, to organize our life, to animate our lives, to prioritize our life around God's principles. And this is what our families need. I'll tell you this, I've said it multiple times, there is no guarantee that your kids are going to live for God because they're ultimately a free agent when they grow up. Agent of free will, I should say, free agent sports. They're agent of free will when they grow up. But if you want to really guarantee that it's all going to blow up, just pull your whole family out of church and see what happens. Nothing good comes out of that. They need to be in church. This is how the Lord has organized these things. I wish I could tell you every one of my kids love the Lord and are living for the Lord. I cannot tell you every one is. Bethany is because she's here, right? She's my favorite. I keep telling her every week. Others do better, others do worse. I'm talking about of my kids. They're not all where I want them to be. Some have kind of gone away and come back, and I'm thankful for that. Jason, who's been always my mission, my mission field maybe as a parent, he goes to church down there in Texas pretty faithfully, kind of active in a lot of things. He sends things via text and things that quote in Bible scriptures and things, and I'm like, wait a minute, who are you? You're not Jason, because Jason doesn't write like that. And that's encouraging. So, you know, you never give up on your kids, but I'm telling you, you need to have them under in a good local church. It's critical. It's important. That's the fourth ingredient. Then I'm going to give you the fifth ingredient. And I want you to consider this. This isn't I just needed one more, so I threw it in there. I think this is an important ingredient. And that is letter E, abundant forgiveness and grace towards each other. You will have, as a family, difficult times and situations. And it's going to require forgiveness and grace. You're going to blow it. Sometimes as the dad, as the husband, you're going to come home from work, and it's just been one of those days. And you're going to come home, and you're going to say, I am not going to have this carry on into my house. So you walk into the house, and everything goes wrong. And pretty soon you're yelling and screaming, and you're just being, okay, you may not mean yelling and screaming, but you're, okay. I have found that even when I'm, yeah, I'm fine, how are you? Yeah, okay. People say, why are you yelling? I'm not yelling, I'm fine, leave me alone. Quit bothering. And they're like, whoa. Sometimes it happens. What you want is to be able to say, you know what, I'm sorry. I was wrong. Please forgive me. You want abundant grace and forgiveness, because everyone is going to sin against everyone in that family. Parents are going to sin against kids. When I say sin against, I'm not talking about anything that's vile type stuff. I'm talking about just the natural things that occur. Unkind words, maybe slights and things like that. You want to give it, because someday you're going to need to receive it from them. Parents against children against parents, spouse against spouse, sibling against sibling. There must be abundant forgiveness and grace. It is the oil that makes the machinery function properly. Taking the grace and forgiveness out of a home is like draining oil out of your car and deciding, I'm going to drive to California. No, you're not. You're going to go down the road, but you ain't getting to California. There's going to be some problems there. And by the way, that's really why you have to stay close to the Lord, because the Lord is what gives us that ability, the grace, the forgiveness. He begins working and convicting us and helping us to do those things. Now, I think those are the critical ingredients that you have to adjust to your family in your unique situations. All need to be there, but you need to adjust them accordingly. So what I want us to do, I want us, as we get now to the end, the last of this lesson, which is the last of this series, I'm going to, you can turn to if you want to, but I'm going to read our foundational verse, which was Psalms 127, again to us. And it says, except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain. They labor, they're working, they're trying to make it happen, but it's all in vain. They labor in vain that build it. Except the Lord keep the city, the watchman, the man who's guarding, the man who's going to blow the trumpet, the watchman waketh, but in vain. In other words, you can do all you want to do to protect that city, but the Lord is not in it. It's all in vain. So here's what I would tell you. Considering our homes, Christian homes, we as believers must keep God central and foundational to our homes. We must do this. This is our mission. This is a necessity. God is not simply a good thing to have in our homes. God is essential. And the last statement is this. Without God, all other things, all the vacations, all the Christmases, all of the going out to eat, all other things are for naught. You can pick the right neighborhood, have the great house, have the great school, have everything perfect. You leave God out of it, it's all for naught. Except the Lord build a house, they labor in vain that build it. And let's pray. Father, I pray now.